This podcast is brought to you by DIA, the trusted global neutral forum for healthcare product development professionals. DIA, driving insights to action.
The speed of change in clinical research and drug development is accelerating thanks to new technologies and scientific discoveries. Today, we can already see the therapies of tomorrow, driven by gene editing, precision medicine, and many other technologies. In 2018, the U.S. FDA approved a record high number of novel drugs. It was 59 new drugs approved in 2018. So one would think that these approvals were driven by a relatively heavy use of regulatory science, which FDA defines as the science of developing new tools, standards, and approaches to assess the safety, efficacy, quality, and performance of all FDA-regulated products. So the question is regulatory science keeping pace with the rapid advances in science and technology that we see today? That's the question for us today. I am Alberto Grignolo, editor of the DIA Global Forum. My guest today is Dr. Adora Ndu, who is Executive Director, Global Regulatory Policy for Research and Engagement at BioMarin Pharmaceutical. Adora also served for the past 2 years as regulatory science co-editor for our DIA Global Forum. Adora, pleasure to be with you again. Thank you very much for joining me.
Thank you. Thank you, Alberto. Good to be here.
The first question, I talked about a lot of advances in technology, molecular biology, et cetera. Has the development of advanced therapies driven corresponding advances in regulatory science?
Alberto, that's a really good question. I think very timely, especially with the evolution in the regulatory landscape supporting the development of advanced therapies. I would say that there are a few things that have driven these advances, including, importantly, development of these therapies have been a key factor in advancing regulatory science in this space. Looking at it, I think we are at a point now where there is so much innovation in this space and the regulatory aspects are catching up. So we now have 3 approved gene therapy products in the U.S. and over 700 or 800 INDs for cell and gene therapy filed with FDA. So the agency...
700?
Yes.
Did you say 700 INDs?
700 to 800 INDs for cell and gene therapy is what we're hearing from FDA. So that's a lot of activity. And so with that, you can anticipate that their experience with these types of products is increasing. And there's need to further develop the regulatory framework, which they are doing. You're aware of the guidances that have been issued, a number of guidances over the last year and a half or so to clarify the regulatory expectations and to encourage innovation and innovative approaches to developing these products.
To what extent are these guidances ahead of the curve versus slightly behind the curve? In other words, is science driving regulatory science, or is regulatory science a little bit ahead in helping science sort of take the right steps towards meeting regulatory science and regulatory requirements?
In this case, I would say that science is driving the regulatory science. Part of the challenge here is a number of health authorities, including the U.S., they're still learning about the development of these products. They're learning about the safety profile. They're learning about the efficacy profile, the needs from a manufacturing perspective. My thoughts are that with each interaction, with each product that's filed, with each product that's approved, the regulatory experience is broadened. And with that, that informs the policies and the advances in innovation that are deemed to be acceptable that we see coming out of the agencies. And that seems to be the approach that is being taken here.
I get the sense that in the past, many, many years ago, maybe decades ago, guidance from FDA would lag perhaps years behind science. It feels today like guidance from FDA lags maybe months behind science, certainly not years, maybe not even as short as weeks. But it seems to be the case that FDA provides guidance fairly quickly. Is that correct or not correct in your view?
So I would say that definitely there's been an initiative within the agency to try to expedite the guidance process. Even while I was there at FDA, there was focus on issuing out guidance because then that helps to provide regulatory clarity. And not just issuing out draft guidance, but also an increased focus on actually moving to finalize these guidances. And so we are seeing FDA specifically move faster in developing policies where there is need to develop policies, as well as finalizing these policies, just to ensure that clarification is provided to external stakeholders. One recent example is the Regenerative Medicine Expedited Programs Guidance that was issued probably about a year ago and has just recently been finalized. So very, very, very fast process to issuing the guidance shortly after 21st Century Cures was enacted that provided for this new expedited program, and also very quickly finalizing the guidance after providing an opportunity for public to comment on it. So I would agree with you in a sense that we are seeing FDA move faster to develop these policies and to finalize them. I would say case by case is also plays a role. So what we see in some spaces, we don't necessarily see in others. I think it depends on the level of priority that the guidances play, and of course, whether there's any sort of statutory requirement associated with the issuance of the guidances.
Yes, some of us will remember a time when a draft guidance would remain a draft guidance for years, maybe decades.
Oh, yeah.
What you're describing, that was, we hope, long ago, but now you're describing a situation where a draft guidance becomes a final guidance perhaps within a year or less, if I
understood
you correctly.
Exactly. In some cases, yes. I mean, obviously, there are some situations where it takes a little bit longer, but I do know that there's an increased focus to move these draft guidances to final.
So looking at the rest of this year, for example, what do you think will be the regulatory topics that are regulatory science topics that will be top of mind in 2019?
There are a number of topics that come to mind. I would say an increased focus on biomarkers and developing ways to streamline their development. And one of the reasons I say that is, you know, just looking at some of the changes that are taking place, or at least have been proposed to the structure of the Center for Drugs to establish the new Office of Drug Development Science, which will essentially house three new divisions, one being one that will be focused on biomarkers, and another being one that will be focused on clinical outcome assessments. So I think that will be an area where we'll see a lot of activity with the agency trying to elevate their focus on biomarkers and PROs and making them more formal elements in the drug development and review process. I think we'll continue to see innovation in the gene therapy space with FDA continuing to think of and issue out guidance on ways to continue to support and expedite development in this space. Innovative clinical trial designs is also another topic that I think we will see mature this year, with proposals being discussed, hopefully in workshops, and you know, hopefully we'll see some more guidance issued in this area. And just to add one more topic that I think will be top of mind in 2019, I would say the use of real-world data and real-world evidence to inform drug development and safety. That topic has actually been identified as a top strategic priority for FDA.
At the end of 2018, FDA announced a new framework for the real-world evidence program. And I guess it was a very welcome event for many stakeholders. As you mentioned, you worked at FDA for many years. Have you already seen progress in translating real-world data into real-world evidence that might be suitable for making regulatory decisions?
I would say yes, I've seen that. I mean, the progress has been on the slower side, but granted, it is progress, and there's a lot of dialogue around how to leverage real-world data and real-world evidence in development. Real-world data has been around for quite some time now, and it's really helpful to see FDA and other health authorities really thinking critically about how its use can be advanced. So much data is being collected and really taking an approach to understand the data, their strengths and limitations is critically important to helping us incorporate the evidence in drug development. So while I was at FDA, I did spend some time in pharmacovigilance. And at the time, the only key resource for assessing drug safety was more the passive surveillance based on reports that were submitted by the public. And at some point, FDA rolled out the Sentinel system, which provided an opportunity for more active monitoring of the drug safety post-marketing using real-world, large amounts of real-world patient data. And you know, I'm sure you know that FDA has a goal of making that system more robust to allow even more broader utility and potentially make that useful to inform other aspects of the healthcare decision making. There's been some progress there, you know, on the post-marketing side. FDA has also classified patient registries and natural history studies as providing a source of real-world data that can be used to generate real-world evidence. With those types of data, those are typically more robust and typically incorporate a more organized system of collecting uniform data. And the use of historical controls have been accepted to support generation of efficacy data in clinical trials, especially in the area of rare diseases where challenges exist.
To what extent do you think FDA is listening to external stakeholders in relation to their RWE program, innovative clinical trial designs, clinical outcome assessments, and other things, biomarkers, versus just devising its own guidance internally based on its own sort of compass and direction?
You know, that's a really good question. My sense is that, you know, especially being involved in policy externally and having been involved in policy internally at FDA, what I see is that the agency is reaching out to external stakeholders, whether via the use of public workshops or even just the standard comment period on these guidances. We've seen a number of workshops on some of these key topics, and we have seen some comments on guidances actually be taken into account and incorporated. So I do see that there is an attempt to do some outreach to get that feedback. One area where I would want to see a little bit more, even more generally, is the application internally. You know, so once these policies are finalized at the basic review level, where you actually have a product under review, really coming to an agreement between sponsors and reviewers, the folks actually doing the work, based on some of what we're hearing, what we're seeing on the policy front. So it's helping connect those dots will help us come full circle.
Is it fair to say that the agency doesn't want to be caught being behind the science, behind innovation that could benefit patients, but rather wants to be very much part of the ecosystem that is leveraging innovation, driving product development forward, and making sure that the right products reach patients as soon as possible, at least in regulatory terms?
I think so. I think that's a fair statement. There's a fine balance there, though, that I see FDA really trying to maintain that balance of being ahead of the curve while also taking learnings based on firsthand experience working through some of these innovative products to inform the policies. So there's a balance that I see FDA trying to maintain there.
Well, Adora, thank you very much for your insight as a former FDAer and now on the industry side in regulatory policy. I much appreciate your perspective today. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Alberto. It's really nice speaking with you today.
For DIA Global Forum, I am Alberto Grignolo.
To learn more about this topic, visit us online at diaglobal.org.